Welcome and welcome back to our podcast, Gen X and Gen Z in a Dialogue, a podcast about generations, leadership, and communication. In this podcast, we have different perspectives come together. For one, the experience of Gen X, personified by my dad. Please say hello, because normally I always forget you in the intro.
Hi.
Then also the new ways of thinking of Gen Z by me, and of course, the experiences of our guests. We explore how collaboration across generations really works, because it's not really about differences, but what we have in common. We also talk about leadership, communication, and the challenges and opportunities that arise when different generations meet. And also we have unique topics brought in by our guests based on their personal and professional experience. Before we dive into today's episode, we would like to briefly reflect on our last conversation. In that episode, we discussed the generational topic, leadership, communication, and of course, coaching with Chamika Ruwangi Kadurubana. And one key takeaway was advice on career selection, emphasizing the importance of considering long-term career goals, potential growth opportunities, and culture when choosing a job. Today, we're especially excited to welcome our guest, Lisa Broderick. We'll be talking about all the topics already mentioned before, her experiences and her insights and knowledge in terms of supporting women and people in general through coaching. Lisa herself has spent more than 3 decades working with CEOs, boards, and leadership teams, helping them turn strategy into execution that actually holds up under pressure. And what's become increasingly important in her work is the human side of leadership, how people communicate, stay aligned with their values, and lead effectively across different generations as the world becomes more complex. She's also the founder of the nonprofit Police to Peace and co-author with Marshall Goldsmith of Permanence, which explores how leaders sustain the behaviors that build trust, connection, and long-term impact. Welcome, Lisa. Thank you for joining us today on our podcast. And before we start with the questions, I would just ask you to introduce yourself a bit more so that the listeners can get to know you better.
Wonderful. Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you, Gerhard. It is a pleasure to be here all the way across the ocean. That was a wonderful introduction, talking about the generations. And I do think about the generations. And I'm writing about that now as I look back on Silicon Valley. So when I was the equivalent of a Gen Z and Gen Xer, I grew up in Silicon Valley, and I was very young, going to Stanford University. And I wondered about all these things, wondered about career and authority and leaders and what it would all be like. And then grew up over time, and then I became one of those. And as I reflect back, I think about all of the worries that I had, all of the dreams that I had, the past that I had, the choices I made. And I saw a really formative industry that changed the world at its very earliest stage. And to be part of that has been wonderful. And now we have new generations of leaders, young people doing things all over the country, all over the world, that are in different technologies or different industries that one day we'll look back and say, wow, that was really consequential, the work that they did. So thank you so much for having me to talk about this.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us today on our podcast. And I'm just going to start right in with the question. And that's the one that I ask everyone that joins us on here. And that's, what has been your overall view and experience with the generational topic, with the different generations? And is there something that's still stuck in your mind and experience, or something you learned when having to do with this topic?
Yeah, it is. It is how remarkable my generation had greater trust in leaders. We had we knew that people didn't always follow through with their word, and that was okay with us. So people were allowed to be less authentic, and we kind of looked for perfection. And I think young people don't do that. So what I'm seeing, the real shift is in what earns trust among young people. So again, in the prior generations, authorities came from title and experience and position. That's what I'm used to. But you have these new generations, Gen Z and Gen Alpha. Trust comes from authenticity, right? They're asking, are you real? Are you consistent? Are you doing what you say you live? Do you live what you say? So leading these people has become very difficult, because it's less about having the answers and more about how they show up for young people.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting.
I want to step into this. Sorry, Rebecca, but I was reading the last article of Lisa, And it was about this early start of computers. And I think it was also about your father, Lisa, that he was a very early entrepreneur in this field. And he has some people around him. I have still this picture in mind, which was also in this article. What influence had then in this case, especially, yeah, your father and this community, maybe also. I have no experience or no information how much contact you had with all the others, but it was a picture with, I think, 15 persons, and I think one of them was your father.
In the
How
middle with the peace sign,
ha
hilariously, the one who looks like me, the blonde.
Okay. But how he has influenced you then also, huh?
Oh, a tremendous amount, and just what I said about authenticity and perfection and leadership. And so those generations, I'm the last of the baby boomers, very much looked up to adults. And so we were young, and they had title and position and lives and importance and all kinds of things that they had done in their careers. So I very much looked up to him. And he was a generation of engineers who were doing these remarkable things. That article was about, it was way more remarkable than they even knew. I mean, those are the days when random access memory, you may know what that is. Everyone knows that it's what allows modern computers to run, didn't even exist. They were using punch cards in a serial linear fashion. I mean, we couldn't do anything. And now we're looking at quantum computers, which don't even use random access memory. So looking up to those people and wanting to be like them and emulate them, rather than questioning their authenticity, rather than questioning their leadership, there wasn't a lot of that. I would say that there was a lot of wanting to become like them and make and do even better than they did, but not questioning their leadership. And that is not what young people are doing today. They want people to live what they say. And in a lot of ways, a lot of adults in governments and in business, and certainly in high technology, you see these companies, they are not living what they say. They are not walking their talk.
Okay. Since you already asked about Lisa's father, I want to pick up on your post that you wrote for Mother's Day, because you said that your mother was also in, she had her career in Silicon Valley. And I wanted to ask you if you could tell us a bit more about this career of hers, because I think you also wrote that it was very hard for her as a woman and that's very challenging. And I just wanted to ask you how it was for her and how she influenced you.
Well, imagine going, I mean, it's almost hard to imagine in the 1950s and 1960s, where women were told that math was not good for them, or they weren't good at math, both. And women couldn't even have credit cards of their own in the United States until the 70s. They had no form of payment. And so but my mother was, she was the eldest of eight. She grew up in New York City. She was not having any of that. She had her own career. She became an economist. Very early on, when we lived in Phoenix, which I talked about in the article about my father, and then later in Silicon Valley, no longer working as an economist, she worked in the very early high tech industry, and had a lot of things which have been known to be called the glass ceiling, and that is the ceiling above which you cannot get, but it's not visible, but you know it's there, meaning promotions and ascending to the tops of these companies. And because of people like my mother, that glass ceiling is largely no longer there. It's still there in some ways. There's very little female representation, women representation on very large corporate boards, very important corporate boards, for example. In the C-suite, women are 50% of the population of the country, but not 50% in these positions. I think they'll get there as we become more gender, I don't want to say blind or use another pejorative word, where gender doesn't count, because you have very powerful women, very strong, very driven women doing wonderful things and ascending to positions finally in these companies. And my mother would have been one of them. With that said, she was born so early on. She was like my father, the very first generation of women who were able to hit that glass ceiling. And then when she hit the glass ceiling and she could go no further in high technology, she became an executive coach, which I now am, which I find a really wonderful coming full circle.
So you basically were also influenced by your mother in your career then later on?
Oh, I became an economist. I was trained as an economist at Stanford. Data and
Okay.
numbers. Women are, girls are good at math. I was good at math. My mother was good at math. You can't get a PhD in economics without it. It's all math. And so she basically said, that's not true. Don't believe them.
That's
And to
amazing.
my brother and sister. And so, and the family were very, my brother and sister are still live in Silicon Valley, and they had careers of their own. One's a doctor and one is a lawyer. So they didn't believe any of society's stories about what you could become, and instead were inspired by the dedication and hardworking and success of my parents to become, to even become more than they had become in their own lives.
Okay.
Cool.
I also wanted to ask you about your book that you co-wrote with Marshall Goldsmith. I've seen some LinkedIn posts of yours, but I wanted to ask you if you could also maybe, for the listeners that don't know you or Marshall Goldsmith, kind of explain what it's about, what are the key topics, just so that they can also get, kind of a summarization of what the
Yeah,
book is
sure.
about.
Well, permanence is about doing very small things in order to change your life in big ways. We see so many self-help this and do that, and they seem like that they would really be a good idea to just, do this one small thing. But the truth is that making one change and hoping it will change your whole life does not work. And so what Dr. Marshall Goldsmith has studied over 40 years is how do you actually change as a leader? That's his work is in leadership and executive coaching and the C-suite and in business. With that said, it can be applied to anyone. So imagine if you could do a very simple thing at the end of the day, which, by the way, people have been doing throughout history. The book talks about going back millennia to very, very early Greek and Roman philosophers who were using the same approach of this. They would do self-measurement at the end of a day. They would ask themselves, did I do this thing that I intended to do today? Was I this particular way? And so that act of self-measurement results in them, it's a reinforcement or it's feedback. If it's reinforcement that they actually did the thing, they feel better about themselves. And if it's feedback that they didn't, they can contemplate why they didn't do it. So it's called permanence because it's an aspirational title, allowing people to aspire to make permanent changes in their lives through very simple daily habits. And basically, it's this: you ask yourself a set of very simple questions, which are in the book. They're called daily questions, and they may be questions that anyone could ask themselves and really benefit from. Did I do my best today to be happy? Did I do my best to find meaning? Did I do my best to build personal relationships? But here's the really good part. You can ask yourself questions that you want to work on. Did I do my best to make eye contact in meetings today? And you might be asking yourself that because you know you're shy. You know you won't get promoted if you don't seem like a leader, and leaders are not shy. So you've diagnosed this problem that you want to have, but you can't remember to look people in the eye when you speak to them. If you make that one of their daily questions, the research has shown, and I did this research myself, and I'm still doing it as an economist, taking down people's answers to their daily questions every weekday for years at a time. We're doing this research. If you ask yourself and reflect on yourself at the end of every day or the beginning of the next day, let's say for the prior day, your subconscious will eventually do the behavior that you want to be. You will be reminded during the day to make eye contact in meetings. It's without fail. If you ask yourself that question every day, did I do my best to not snack at night? Let's say I want to lose weight. And you ask yourself that at the end of every day, you will stop snacking at night. Because of the feedback you're giving yourself, and honestly, because of the shame and embarrassment, you wrote the question and you can't even do it. I mean, eventually parts of you will kick in. Now, people need to actually do the practice. And truthfully, most people quit after about 2 weeks. So what you want to do in the book, it talks about how to extend further than 2 weeks. There's a journal in 2 weeks, and it tells you how to pair yourself up with a friend or a colleague or someone that you know, where you're asking them at the end of every day their daily questions, you're calling them, and they're calling you or on the same conversation. That way, you know you're going to be asked these questions. And the research subjects who did this, who I followed for a year, and some of whom are still doing it years later, and I'm talking 2 or 3 years later, what they reported to the person was the same feedback for me about why they changed. They said, I didn't want to suffer the shame and embarrassment of having to tell you that I hadn't even tried. Wow. Think about that. For changing your behavior. So it really works. It takes 2 minutes a day. It's the simplest thing in the world you could do, self-measurement. And this is a very easy, easy process to get that going in your life.
I do have a question because it kind of sounds like consistency, but you didn't name the book Consistency. Why is that? Is there a difference between it, like permanence and consistency?
Yeah, I would say, in these days of changing landscapes everywhere, changing political landscapes, changing global landscapes, changing climate landscapes, everything. What is one thing that people really want? They want something that lasts. They want permanence. It's aspirational. We all want that. The truth is that life is change and time is change. Time passes because things change when we perceive time. But people aspire to permanence. And that's why the title is that title.
Thank you for that explanation. I just wanted to make sure that I understood everything. To kind of come back to coaching, I wanted to ask you if there's anything you observe in when coaching different generations, any differences that really stand out to you, and if there are like also differences that you observe in leadership teams, how they work together, how they kind of make their differences work.
Yeah, there's so many things about younger generations that are different, that are different that leaders have to contend with. As I mentioned, authenticity, right? The shift from authority to authenticity. Young leaders don't want perfect leaders. They want self-aware leaders. Basically, it's the same thing, right? Communication, right? They don't want to be told something. They want to be listened to and have a conversation about it. I was in a board meeting with another board member who was on a very large retail chain here in the United States, actually around the world, and they couldn't get over the fact that the young people were arguing with their managers about how to make a latte or whatever it was, because they didn't, they our generation was told what to do and we did it. But that's not younger generations. So, I think it may the biggest issue may be about values, right? So, and we talked about that with authenticity. Values are no longer implied, they must be visible. And remember what I said about my generation. Values were implied. In Silicon Valley, there was a lot of companies being formed, and you could join a company or start a company. You could earn a living. There was wonderful ways. Some people might become very, very wealthy. You were a good person, and the values were implied, and people were like that. But this generation, these younger generations, are not doing that. Their values must be visible. They're much more attuned, again, between the to what leaders say and what they do, the difference. And you talked about consistency. They notice those inconsistencies quickly and they call them out. So values can't just be statements, and companies' values cannot be statements. Young people will not work for companies where they feel that the values are not aligned with what the company say is goodness. So for instance, just a horrible example would be child labor in Asian countries. In order to make a product that we consider a wellness product in the United States, that's just not okay. And so that's one thing about permanence, right? And so the daily behavior in permanence, that's what we focus on. Alignment isn't a philosophy, it's really a daily practice.
I want to jump on this a bit because I think Brenda Benz. She's also a wonderful coach. I was in contact with her about this coaching certificate I did, the program of Dr. Peter Chi, and she was one of these coaches, or is still a coach of this program. And I was having a bit of discussion with her about, I used the wording vulnerability, that this is one of the skills leaders need in the future also. And she was correcting this a bit and said, yeah, she don't want to use the wording vulnerability in this context of C executives, because this looks like you are a weak person. But she was then saying also, use the wording authenticity and openness. And this is more or less what you were also saying, that this is definitely a better wording. And the other thing, what we had also in a discussion with a guest from Singapore, which was also in our podcast, was exactly what you were saying, that in China they see definitely if companies having a kind of a company culture, but they don't live against this culture. People live after 4 months because they see really that they are talking about something, but they don't act according to that. Is this a trend you see also in US that you have really this 4 or 6 months fluctuation that people are really starting in a company and after 4, 6, I don't know, 8 months they leave?
Well, it depends on why they leave. So they leave because one reason could very well be, especially for these generations, they leave because they realize that the company is not aligned with its own values, right? So the values are not being lived. That would be one. They're because what they're most attuned to, as you said, is authenticity. And it's interesting because vulnerability, about 10 or 15 years ago, Brené Brown brought the idea of vulnerability really into the greater, business world, talking about that. And I've heard her recently talk about vulnerability. You can't have courage without vulnerability. And that's actually true. And we need to be courageous in our lives. With that said, I don't think young people are looking for vulnerability. Again, they're looking for people, they're looking for what you said, the shift from authority to authenticity. Right. And so where they don't want to be told, they want to understand within the framework of what they understand, where they are not directed, but they're genuinely listened to. And so leaders who can do that will build a much stronger engagement and will keep those young people. And also, it's very difficult for these companies. They have to live their values. Well, with the way the money system goes, and as we say in the United States, trickle down economics, it's really called neoliberalism. So neoliberalism is the idea where if the shareholder benefits, then all of society benefits. That is really not that has not worked out in very many societies around the world. And it's been difficult for young people to accept that. That a company that's living its values has a CEO which is making 5,000 times what they are. And while authority and experience and all of those things are important, that really seems a little out of balance. And so I think that young people are really looking for that type of balance. They're looking for balance, they're looking for authenticity. And if they don't find it, I think that they feel much more secure, even in a difficult job market, to leave. Whereas my generation, the last of the baby boomer generation, we would have stayed, and probably not molded ourselves to that, but learned a little bit more, and then eventually left more in keeping with what a regular career might look like, where you wouldn't leave before 2 years. That's a more typical career for my generation.
You've already mentioned that leaders need to be self-aware, confident, authentic, and they need to listen. But what can you offer as advice, for example, someone who is leading a company that is who is a Generation X or even older, and they now have to deal with the younger people? They see that the younger people kind of value life more than work. They want to have the freedom and flexibility. What is something that can be done there?
Well, again, there's so many different things. Let's talk about feedback, right? Feedback in my generation was you had an annual review. It was good or it was bad, whatever happened, right? And that was sort of what you dealt with. Young people are not putting up with that. That doesn't resonate anymore. So even younger leaders who are, have to deal with younger generations, they want real-time feedback. They get it in every other part of their lives on social media, right? They want to know how they're doing, and more importantly, they want to know how to grow. So leaders who are authentic and self-aware with feedback that is real time, and they have a mechanism for do that and for doing that, and it becomes the culture of the company, can really be successful. So they can create ongoing low friction feedback loops, which would be much more effective. Check-ins. we call them. Have a check-in with someone, like my check-in for the daily questions every day. You could have check-in with young people, with their managers weekly. How are you doing? Are you okay? Does everything, do you have everything you need? How do you feel about this? So the idea that feedback needs to be continuous, not occasional, I think will really help leaders.
I have a question, especially about feedback, because I know that Dr. Marshall Goldsmith is a big fan of feed forward. What is your opinion on that? And can you share examples, maybe also from your executive coaching, that this was also very helpful? Of course, not names, or maybe some examples where we made a big difference using feedback, but put it also then as a feed forward, which means not only focusing on the past, what was wrong, but also giving them a view of the future and supporting them to make things better.
Well, it can be used in two ways. So feedback is given to you. Right? You can ask for feedback. You can say to your spouse or your loved one, "Darling, hey, darling, did you like what we did this evening? Or did you like my new friends you met at the party?" You could ask them for feedback, and that's not feed forward. With that said, there's a different way of asking the question, especially if you sense that something might be off. Let's say that your spouse didn't talk to anybody and looked a little scowly and didn't seem like they really didn't like the party. That is not the time to ask them whether they liked your friends or the party. Instead, you might ask them a feed forward question. "Hey, darling, the next time we do this, what would you like to do?" That's a feed forward question. That is turning feedback on its ear and making it something positive and aspirational for the future. So managers can use feed forward, but it still comes as feedback. Feed forward is a really great way to use feed forward is for someone to train themselves to ask. So you are the person. You're the person being managed. You're the person in the company. You're the person who wants to grow and learn in your life. You would ask your manager, sit down with them and say, "I've been here for 6 months and I'd really love for you to tell me what could I do better? What are ways that I might be able to, achieve this over time? How do you think I could connect more with people around me? Are there skills that you think that I could improve on or that I would really benefit from?" That's a feed forward question. And you can use it as a manager, and say, well, you could bring them into the office and say, "Well, I really think you should, get these skills and do these things," but it's not going to come across in the same way. So honestly, the best, of my opinion, the best way to use feed forward is to train yourself to ask. That's where you get the best information, and you can really learn and grow for yourself.
This is kind of what I learned in Dr. Peter G's course, ask great questions, and this would be then definitely a part of it. Yeah, thank you for this. And what tips do you have for companies dealing with this young generation when it comes especially to problems, when you see that there is a conflict, especially on the different perspectives? Because this is what I have with Rebecca also. And that the idea of this podcast was starting out of this. And when you see this, maybe also having a fixed mindset on the managers, the executives, and they want to have the younger generations, but still are not able to adapt. And you have then the younger ones who are really having, this drive, this artificial intelligence background, these kind of things. How you can connect this both generations then?
Well, back to the example about my generation, we were told, we had examples of what to do. We were told what to do. We were told when we were doing well or not doing well, and we just sort of accepted it. And so that's not true anymore because authenticity is key. And so the best leaders need to translate between worlds, between generations, not just communicate. So when you think about intergenerational leadership, Gerard, which you just mentioned, again, it's often about translation. So imagine you have several different groups within your company and several different groups of ages. Helping those different groups understand each other's context, assumptions, and expectations. And that is what I'm sure you do with Rebecca. When you give someone, if someone wants authenticity as a young person, they want context. They want to know more. They're not just going to do what you say. The context needs to be, we're going to, you know, everyone should fill out this expense form this particular way so that we can report our earnings correctly, so that we can go public. Right? That's context in a company for young people who might not want to do that, instead of sticking the form in their face and saying, fill this out. That's not enough. You're not translating. You're not taking the time to translate the assumptions, expectations, the context, and the why behind it. And I think it is more work. All of this is much more work for companies than they're used to. They were used to people like me who would dutifully execute and do that over time and stay for 2 years, learn as much as one could, and then move on and have a regular career path and basically move up and try to be better, right, than the executives that came or the people that came before us. That's not true anymore. Young people want authenticity. They want to know the why behind things, and it's going to require that today's managers, who are of older generations, understand that to keep these people engaged and the wonderful, wonderful brilliance that they bring in terms of their perspective, keep them in companies, they're going to have to do a little bit of work. They're going to have to walk the talk. They're going to have to give context. They're going to have to explain things. They're going to have to do more than just tell. They're going to have to communicate and listen. Right. And they're going to, in order to stay ahead of the generations who might want to leave because the company isn't doing all of those things. They can bridge the gap and build stronger teams and stronger companies if they do these things.
Okay. Do you want to ask another? Okay. Yeah, we've kind of talked about the leaders and also kind of older leaders, but I wanted to kind of focus on the younger generations going into the workplace. Is there anything you can give them as advice when navigating these, yeah, different opinions, expectations, and also kind of how they can follow their goals and be disciplined and reach their own potential?
Right. Well, the first part of that, if a young person knew everything that we were talking about and had really embodied that, you know, and understand it and be able to do that on a daily basis, they would have a much easier time at work because they would understand what's going on. What's going on is you have an older generation that had a different way of being, and the younger generation, their generation, is not that way. And so again, the older way of being accepted orders, did what we were told, didn't require context, you know, we're patient because we wanted something for ourselves, not because we wanted to stay at the company or help change the company. We might want that, but we wanted something for ourselves, for our own careers. I think if young people understand that the older generations did not so much value authenticity, and it's not their fault, it's simply culture. So the culture of the company might be completely different than the young person. And if the young person understands that and doesn't dismiss them in a precipitous way and just leave after 8 months, and understands that they need to help develop communication, they need to explain to people that they need context. They need to explain to people in the, you know, the generations above them and the company that authenticity is really key. But remember, you know, someone coming at you with angry words and accusations, no matter who they are, the person who is receiving that is not going to listen, really. They're just going to shut them down. And I think that's what's happening in a lot of these companies as young people express their need for authenticity in ways that may just seem frustrated, but they seem angry to the companies. And knowing a lot of these things for the young person, the things that we've talked about today and what this wonderful podcast is about, bridging these two very, very different generations, I think will help young people be able to assimilate into the professional world better. And ultimately they'll change the professional world. But the professional world is not that way right now. It's a, you know, as we in my nonprofit Police to Peace, I train the police officers in the United States. There's a phrase called command and control. Command and control is where there's the police chief and they give the orders and people follow the orders. And in corporate America, that is largely true as well. Well, young people are not looking for command and control. They're looking for context and communication and authenticity and understanding, right? See how different that is?
Yeah.
And so if the young person understands that the world is changing, it may not change as quickly as they like, as fast as they like, but it is changing. I think they can enter these companies and make a really big difference.
You've already mentioned your nonprofit, and to kind of end this episode, I wanted to ask you what it is about, what you do, because you already said that you train police officers. I wanted to ask you how you train them exactly, what methods to use, and if there's anything you can share with us.
Yes, of course. So a lot of people in my on my career path later in life, they may look at something that they want to do and haven't done yet. And Marshall and I talk about this in the book, and Marshall always says this: when you're your 90-year-old self, you don't want to look back and say, "Gee, I wish I'd really started that nonprofit so I could help kids or help this or help that." Don't wait. So I didn't wait. I actually did. I founded a nonprofit called Police to Peace. I live in Washington, D.C. A lot of the funding comes from the federal government, so it's a very good place to live for that. And we developed a curriculum. I and many, many change-minded police chiefs, very advanced police chiefs who had not only been chiefs of police and sheriffs around the country for decades, but had read about leadership and personal development and wanted to develop better police officers. Police officers who are all the things we talk about today, communicative and self-aware, right? And understand nuances. Because when you look at police community interaction in really any country, the misunderstandings can result in violence pretty quickly. And it's the police officer who can be trained in these softer skills, let's say. A hard skill would be shooting and tackling and things like that. A softer skill would be de-escalation, communication, understanding, context, asking questions, right? Really having a feel for where the person is coming from so they can make a decision about what needs to happen next, because they are ultimately in control, of course. And so that the nonprofit focuses on that. And we use retired police chiefs and sheriffs in order to deliver trainings around the country, to deliver trainings around the country. The trainings are not only of the police department or the sheriff's department, but also of the community. And there's a word that came out of England in the 1800s called peace officer. And it came from a man who became a, I think he was, I don't think he was prime minister of Britain, but he was very high in the government of Britain. And he wrote about policing it as a frame of mind where someone could as their first value, keep the peace in the community and then enforce the laws when they needed to. And a lot of American related countries and British related countries have adopted that. So Australia and New Zealand and Canada, and many of the others, some of them in the Caribbean. And America, of course, did. So in America, most states call their police officers peace officers in the actual legal statutes. So we introduce that as a frame of mind for police officers in order to train them in the context of being a police officer, keeping the peace first and enforcing the law when they needed to, in order to have deeper relationships with their communities. And then we train the communities as well to understand what the police are doing so that the communities can appreciate what they're doing. Very much like, the older company, which has the values and the command and control, and the young people coming into the business saying, "Why aren't you listening to me? Why aren't you seeing me?" In the United States and around the country, you have young people saying to the police officer, "Why aren't you listening to me? Why are you just ordering me? Why are you telling me what to do?" And the young people want context because it's a generational thing. And so we're teaching that to police departments around the country.
I think that's a really wonderful idea, and I think it's also a very important topic because, like you mentioned, when, for example, when there are protests happening and there's police there, it can escalate very quickly because they just misunderstand each other. So, yeah, that's a really
Does
important
not need
topic.
to. It does not need to be a misunderstanding for a police officer and a citizen. It does not need to be a misunderstanding between a manager who may be a baby boomer like me and a Gen Z.
Yeah, that's true. So I think it's very important. And also, I've never heard of this before, and I really like the concept of a peace officer. So thank you for introducing that to us. It's very important, and that's definitely something I will take away. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Dad, do you have any more questions? Anything else you want to mention?
No, I think this was fantastic insights from Lisa about, I think also future leadership. I think this is also was a big message what future leaders should do. And this is a topic where I Yeah, have also in my heart, because I think in the last episode or in the episode before, I was saying also that I'm originally a Gen Z, but yeah, unfortunately I was born a little bit earlier. And I always wanted to understand the why, and I wanted to know the context. And this is exactly what Lisa was saying, that this Gen Z yeah doesn't accept command control any longer. They really want to know what difference I make for the company. And I think that this example you gave with this context of going public, that you do this paperwork because it is needed for the next or the next step in our company, instead of giving the task to this young generation and say, fill it out. And I think this make a big difference. And yeah, it was great and fantastic hearing this from you.
Wonderful. Well, yeah, as you mentioned, Gerhard, the future of leadership isn't about knowing more. It's about staying aligned with who you are while everything around you changes. And that goes for the older generations and it goes for the younger generations who are coming up in leadership.
Thank you for that. Yeah, I also wanted to say that it was a very nice conversation, and I personally can take away a lot from it. It's very obvious that you have a lot of experience and, not only in a generational topic, but overall in coaching and everything else, and giving advice to not only the younger generations, but also the older ones. So thank you for that. I really enjoyed talking to you. And yeah, I think when everybody's done, has everybody said what they wanted to say, then we can do the outro.
Yes, and thank you very much for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you. Amazing to hear. Okay. Well, then to the listeners, as always, if you have any feedback that you want to give us or any questions you want to ask us, I always put the email address of the podcast in the description. So please reach out to us if there's anything you want to talk to us about. And yeah, that's it for this episode. Thank you for listening, and until the next one. Bye.
Ciao.